The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Okay, Tov, yeah, pretty good. I was also following that AstraZeneca story, the pause of the so-called natural pause of the development of the vaccine, because I think so many people are building their hopes that we will get back to an element of normality when the vaccine comes out. And this vaccine is kind of not coming out, really, is it? I mean, it's just taking its time. It's obvious that we can't just produce it in a heartbeat. And even when we eventually have one that we feel can be relied upon and that people feel comfortable with, it's going to take ages to produce it in sufficient volumes to justify, you know, the demand that there will be. So I'm not sure that I'm building too much hope on the whole vaccine story, I have to tell you.
Yeah, it certainly does seem continue to elude us. The government in Israel finally decided yesterday to impose a planned restriction on 40 towns, cities, and neighborhoods. And those are the ones that, of course, that are showing the worst rate of COVID-19 infections. What do these restrictions involve, Anthony?
So nighttime curfews from 7 in the evening until 5 in the morning. There is restriction of movement. Schools are closed in those areas. There is a restriction as to how many people can gather together, both outside and inside. People not allowed to move more than 500 meters from their homes during the curfew period at night. So the 40 towns, cities, neighborhoods include, for example, 9 neighborhoods in Jerusalem, a particular neighborhood in Eilat. Eilat has been quite controversial because it's a very, very small city in terms of the number of permanent residents who live there. And so the residents, the municipality of Eilat has said, it's not fair to judge us based upon the number of permanent residents, because Eilat is actually a much bigger place in terms of the occasional workers who live there. And if you judge us basically only on the number of permanent residents who live in Eilat, then the infection rates are much, much larger per capita than they should ordinarily be. And if you put a lockdown on Eilat, you're affecting the tourism industry, you're affecting our livelihood. So there's been a lot of talk around Eilat. In the end, it seems as if they decided to place a restriction just on a particular neighborhood in Eilat rather than the whole city. And this has been something of the approach. But I have to tell you that some of the numbers that we are seeing coming out of Israeli towns and cities are the worst in the world at the moment. Okay. They're not just kind of, you know, objectively bad. They are horrendous. And it just goes from bad to worse. 3,500 people diagnosed with the infection yesterday, just during the course of one day. And now the authorities are saying that it looks inevitable that a lockdown, a serious nationwide lockdown over the Chagim, potentially over the whole 2-week period covering Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, a much, much more stringent lockdown is unavoidable. That's what people are saying. And to add insult to injury, all of those people who are managing the coronavirus in Israel have had to go into isolation, have had to go into quarantine because they've come into contact with somebody who's been diagnosed with corona. So Professor Ronny Gamzu, who's the coronavirus commissioner, and Yuli Edelstein, who's the Minister of Health, and all kinds of employees and deputy ministers from the Ministry of Health are all in quarantine at the moment as a result of having come into contact with people. And it just is, it's like a circus of events that just doesn't seem to end. Last night, there were reports that police had to stop seven weddings that were taking place within the restricted areas against the rules. I've read some reports about what's going on in the ultra-Orthodox neighborhoods of New York at the current time. I'm not talking about what happened previously, but right now, where the infection rates are all of a sudden starting to skyrocket again. And a lot of people are blaming it on people attending weddings in the period after Tisha B'Av, when, you know, until which weddings were not allowed. All of a sudden, after Tisha B'Av, people are having weddings again. Lots of people attending, no masks in evidence. And now we see infection rates. So unfortunately, it seems as if though, Israel is headed for a very stringent lockdown over the Chagim, over Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and potentially even over Sukkot as well. We'll have to see. But as of now, at least, we have the nighttime curfew in place in these 40 towns, cities and neighborhoods around Israel. Some people are laughing at it and saying, well, why is nighttime not okay, but daytime is okay? People are free to go to work and there's no restriction of movement during the daytime. Why is that different? The answer has come back saying that particularly in the Arab towns and cities, but not only, I mean, it also applies, I think, to ultra-Orthodox neighborhoods in the same respect, that there are a lot of weddings, a lot of parties, a lot of action, a lot of gatherings that take place at nighttime, which the authorities are now trying to prevent. So that's the reason that has been given for this very stringent nighttime lockdown. Police have been deployed, lots of stories about inconsistent treatment in various places, but overall this is now the direction that we're headed towards.
Barry says, yes, but doesn't Israel have the highest testing rate in the world, probably four times higher than that of South Africa?
I'm not sure that that's true, to be honest. I think that we've really not been too good on the testing side. I'll try and have a look and see how we compare in terms of testing. But, you know, my impression has been that our testing has really not been very good at all. We haven't had not nearly as many tests as we should have had. There was a report that I saw somewhere that suggested that the residents of B'nai Brak have been told that they can just turn up and test whenever they like. They don't have to have a reason. They don't have to have justification. They can just turn up and test. And I'm not quite sure whether that's been implemented. I'm just having a quick look on the worldometer because I know Dr. Myberg likes to use it as well. And I see here that Israel is on 16th place in terms of the number of tests per million of population. So it's not as bad as I thought it was. 270,000 tests per million of population. I will try and see where South Africa appears on that same list. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that our testing has improved, but it certainly could be better. And, you know, I think there is evidence to suggest that more tests obviously produce more positive results, but also help in the way that the virus is being controlled. South Africa is number 86 on the test list, 64,000 tests per million of population.
Mm, but obviously a massive, massive difference in the number of people. And
absolutely.
And the vicinity
and the ease of getting around to people, because and obviously Israel being a very, very small place.
That is relevant is that our hospitals are no longer full. Our hospitals are actually very, very, you know, we have very few cases now still coming in to the hospitals. Mm. It doesn't mean that we won't have another surge. And of course, the lessons that we South Africans need to learn the lessons of Israel is that it doesn't mean that it should be a free-for-all, and the things need to be careful. Let's just move on to, of course, this amazing story. The White House will host a peace signing ceremony next week on Tuesday between Israel and the UAE. Who's going to be present from each country to sign the agreement?
Well, you know, cynics in Israel would say that Prime Minister Netanyahu would never lose an opportunity to attend the White House, and certainly not if the TV cameras are rolling. So he's definitely going to be there. He's already confirmed that he is very proud to be taking part in the ceremony, and he called it a foundation, the foundation of the treaty between the two countries. From the Emirati side, they will be sending their foreign minister, which is, I think, not quite of the same level in terms of the delegation. But nonetheless, that's what they've decided to do. The Prime Minister has been quite happy, apparently, to sign it alongside the Emirati Foreign Minister. President Donald Trump absolutely will be there. So this is September the 15th at the White House. And this will really be the formalization of this agreement that we already know has been agreed upon and has already been exercised in terms of the Israeli delegation that's traveled to Abu Dhabi. We spoke about that, and you, of course, had the opportunity to speak to the pilot who flew that very historic plane flight. And there is talk about an Emirati delegation returning to Israel. There are already many, many stories about cooperation, massive cooperation going on between the UAE and Israel. I've said it before and I'll say it again. It doesn't feel the same as the peace treaties between Egypt and Israel or Jordan and Israel. This is a much warmer, much more enthusiastic approach to trying to establish relations between the two countries. We've already seen local travel agencies advertising travel to Abu Dhabi, to the UAE, to Dubai, even tourism of a particular nature, because apparently there's a lot of cosmetic surgery that goes on in the Emirates, and there are already package deals apparently that Israelis can buy to go off and have a bit of a holiday and do some little tightening up and fixing up and you know, pulling together of parts of their body in order to look a little bit better once they return back from their holiday. So a lot of cooperation, a lot of enthusiasm around this, and something positive when we're, you know, all struggling at the moment to find some positive news.
Absolutely right. Tell us about this nano satellite that Israel has launched.
Well, I was fascinated by the story of the nano satellite because I didn't even know what a nano satellite is, or didn't know what it was when I first read the story. And so I actually had to go and look up what a nano satellite is. And I found the explanation saying that a nano satellite is loosely defined as any satellite that weighs less than 10 kilograms. So we're talking about something that's really, really small, a box shaped kind of thing, typically 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters, that sort of size. And in it, is placed all types of experiments and I guess some communication devices. And this is launched into space in order to carry out the experiments that are contained within this little box. And so Israel has been cooperating with the Italian Space Agency, and last week they launched Dido 3, which is a nano satellite. It includes a tiny laboratory in which medical experiments will be performed. And the project is a collaboration not only between the Israeli Space Agency and the Italian Space Agency, but also the Ministry of Science and Technology. And apparently the laboratory was developed by Space Pharma, which includes four particular experiments in the fields of medicine, biology, and chemistry, and they are meant to provide some new and groundbreaking information on diseases and their prevention. So it's like a little miniature laboratory, box-sized laboratory, that's been launched into space, and the results of those experiments apparently will help us as we move forward with medical science and with biological science. So it's a fascinating story, something, again, very, very nice that comes out of Israeli ingenuity and high tech. And we hope that there might be more of these that will help us in the future. And who knows, maybe they will help us also prevent and detect diseases and pandemics like the one that we're suffering at the moment.
Do we know how many Israel has actually, you know, the history of this, of these nanosatellites in Israel?
I am not aware of Israel having launched nanosatellites before being involved in the launch of nanosatellites. What I do know is this particular one had been scheduled to be launched quite some time ago, but the launch was delayed, I think, because of weather conditions more than anything else. I'm not aware or familiar of any history that Israel has with nanosatellites. But again, it's a very interesting space because the orbital area around the Earth where these satellites generally, they're generally low orbit satellites, and it's becoming quite crowded. And so obviously the large satellites are more difficult to find a space within which they can orbit the Earth. And so the smaller ones are becoming all the thing now, these nano satellites. They come in different sizes. They have these standard sizes apparently that they use. I think it's an interesting new development area that I've not been aware of before.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating that these things are being developed all the time. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Interesting conversation, and really, really worth just thinking about the various aspects of what Israel is managing to achieve even in these difficult times.